Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in World of Warcraft and other games. At some point, we haven't gotten there yet. We will, one day, I swear, I promise. I'm Anne Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and definitely not a liar. We will make it to the other material at some point. But I've got two co-hosts with me today, and we're going to talk about World of Warcraft. First up, of course, we've got Matt Rossi, our other lore-focused writer. Hey, Rossi.
Hey. Hi, everybody. It's been a week, so...
Yeah.
I'm not going to dwell on that, but yeah, it's definitely been a week.
Okay. And then, of course, our other co-host is Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Well, hello there, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Dr. Nick. Anyway.
Oh, man, I should change my name to Dr. Loader.
No, you awesome. Shouldn't. So this week we're going to kind of kick back a little bit, and because, well, we've got the Warcraft movie. It's coming out in June, correct? June? Is it June?
It is June, yes.
It's like a little early in England. I think it's like late May in England and June in America.
Yeah, I don't quite get that, but okay. All right, international audience. I guess they're going to see how it tests over there or plays over there.
I find myself wondering if it's just so Duncan Jones can be in England when it, you know what I mean?
Maybe.
He is English.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Maybe. That would make sense. Anyway, since the Warcraft movie is coming out, the Warcraft movie, obviously, it covers the events of the First War, and it's a slightly different telling of the First War, because this is, it's kind of, the way we always describe it, we describe it as like the difference between the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Marvel Comic Universe. Those are two very different things. And unless you're Deadpool, it doesn't really cross that much. And they're two different stories. But Deadpool is so irreverent. I haven't seen the movie yet. I really want to see the movie. But from what I've heard, it's very faithful to its source. So the Warcraft film is coming out. It's going to retell the story of the First War a little bit. We've kind of gotten the impression from the trailer that, yes, it is going to be a different take on this film. But we figured we'd go ahead and talk about the First War in general on Lore Watch and give people an idea of just what was going on at the time. And I don't think that we necessarily need to go into, oh, hey, the orcs were corrupted and all of that, because everybody's pretty familiar with that, particularly after playing Warlords of Draenor. Mm-hmm. But the impetus for the First War beginning, that's probably where we should start. And that, of course, that ties in with Medivh. So, Rossi, Joe, either one of you want to jump in?
I'll do so. Basically, what you have is there's a lot of backstory involved in why Medivh did what he did. But the guardian, Medivh, who at that time lived in Deadwind Pass in a tower called Karazhan, had made contact with Gul'dan after Gul'dan had basically found out that the Legion isn't really a good boss, and that after you've done their bidding, tricked your people into demonic servitude, wiped out the Draenei effectively, They just leave you twisting in the wind with the consequences of your actions.
Basically, what happened was they got the demonic blood. They went all bloodlust and everything, wiped out Chatra City, and then nothing.
Yeah, the Legion literally stopped answering their phone calls. Yep. Now, this could possibly be because the Legion was busy. I mean, it's a large organization, but it's a big universe, lots of things to invade.
Wait, does this count as the Legion avoiding them for conquest and chill?
Essentially, yeah, they weren't down for the consequences of chill. Let's put it that way. But basically, this wouldn't be so bad, except that the problem with drinking demon blood and having a bunch of warlocks running around is warlock magic is inherently corruptive and destructive. Just having a warlock around kills things around you, and the more warlocks you have, the worse it is. Each warlock is essentially a walking toxic waste dump. They poison the land. They corrupt the earth. If you have enough of them, the place becomes unlivable. And they had a lot of them. So Draenor was effectively dying because it was losing the ability to sustain life. The only place that really was getting away from this was Negrand, because there weren't any, like, the new horde was staying away from Negrand because of the red pox, which was a disease that was, you know, spread through. Negrand was basically turned into a big, you know, sickness colony. Yeah, yeah, like, don't go here. You don't want to get this. Which might have been, for all I know, that's Draenor's attempt to save itself, you know, by creating this thing. At least they won't come here. But this left Gul'dan with the problem of he couldn't feed his army of demon blood-drinking orc maniacs. And as they wanted conquest,
and there was nothing to conquest.
Yeah, and they wanted, more importantly, food. And there was nothing to eat. Like, things were dying, and they couldn't feed the amount of people they had. And it was getting bad. And Gul'dan knew eventually people were going to look to him. Like, sure, he'd put Blackhand in as a puppet leader, like the puppet, you know, war chief of the Horde. But eventually people are going to figure out Blackhand isn't smart enough to have done all this.
And it's only a matter of time before somebody points out the warlock standing in the corner.
Yeah,
and says, wait a minute, what about that guy?
Gul'dan's really good at convincing people to do things because, like, you know, he's good at being oily and talking people into doing bad things.
He's also really good, though, about being the last one standing. And I think that's probably a really important thing. Like, he knows that they're going to be looking for him, because even if everything else goes to hell in a handbasket, he's probably still going to be alive.
Yeah. So he basically, at this point, when he and Medivh contacted each other, he was trying to find a way to, you know, give the orcs something to conquer. And Medivh is like, oh, well, it just so happens I happen to be standing on a planet full of things to conquer. Maybe we can work something out. And this is where the impetus of the Dark Portal came from. Now, the Dark Portal was entirely from Medivh. It was Medivh's plan to build it. Gul'dan didn't know how to build a portal like that. It's not like they taught that in shaman school, which is where he originally got his training. And it's not like Kil'jaeden wanted him to get off of Draenor. If Kil'jaeden had a further plan for the orcs, he had not shared it. And he certainly didn't want them leaving Draenor. Because they were maniacs. You know, they were kind of like a
test run. I believe how it was framed anyway was that the orcs were kind of like they were being recruited into the Burning Legion's ranks. And then once, you know, they had been successfully corrupted, it was like, oh yeah, okay, these guys are pretty beefy and strong. Well, we'll just save them for later. And then they wandered off to find some more people to add to the collective army. So there wasn't really any plans per se for them.
Yeah. And they were basically more of a pet project for Manoroth than anything else.
Yeah, kind of.
Manoroth felt personally attached to them because they drunk his blood. It was he who corrupted them. Granted, it was Kil'jaeden's plan, and it was Gul'dan who actually talked them into doing it. But Manoroth felt, like, not protective because he's a demon lord, but he felt like this was that it reflected on him what they did.
It wasn't a case of these are my babies or anything like that, because that would just be weird. But
yeah, it was more like, yo, this is my blood. What they do, that's a reflection of how powerful and good I am at what I do.
So if they screw up, then I look bad.
They were his guild.
Yeah. I guess, that puts this into a perspective that I didn't like.
Man, I just had a mental image of him sitting there talking to these orcs into signing his charter.
Look, they were his raid team. He had them, you know.
Look, I will give you a chalice of blood if you sign my charter. It's a really nice chalice.
You don't get to keep the chalice.
Tasty.
You don't get to keep the chalice, though. I need that back. So basically, after they'd made their little pact, Medivh, because I'm just going to say it, I know it's a spoiler, but whatever. Medivh was possessed by Sargeras, the actual head of the Burning Legion, Kil'jaeden's boss.
Oh, and Rossi, if nobody knows this by now.
I know.
This is so far beyond spoiler point. Yeah.
So when he contacted Medivh, he was in Medivh. He'd possessed Medivh as part of his long-range plan. When he contacted Gul'dan, he did so basically he's co-opting his subordinate's program for his own ends.
But he's the boss, so he gets to do that, right?
Yeah.
We should probably take 2 seconds, though, just for if for some reason you guys don't know how Medivh wound up getting possessed. This all goes back to when Aegwynn defeated the Avatar of Sargeras, and he decided to go hide away inside of her in the power of the Guardian of Trisfall, and then she was just started going slightly crazy, and then all of a sudden it was Medivh popped out, and Medivh was, oh, look, I am now this human hybrid guardian / blend with Sargeras. That's the TLDR version.
It's more complicated, but that doesn't really... It doesn't matter all that much for the first war, how he got there. The fact is he was there.
Sure.
They set up the portal. It took a while. I believe it took like 5 years, but I don't remember the exact amount of time it took to build the thing. Because, they'd killed off most of the Draenei, so they couldn't use them as slave labor. So they had to labor themselves, and it's kind of hard to get a bunch of demonically warped orcs to do things. They're hard to motivate. But in time, they got the portal built.
Me want kill. How about you build this thing? No, me want kill. Okay, kill this rock by placing it on the other rock.
Look, I need 10 of you to kill these rocks by hitting them with hammers so they fall out of the ground. Then I need 100 of you to carry the rocks over there. We going to smash with rocks? Yeah, sure.
Sure. That's what's going to happen here.
This is basically, he got the portal built, the orcs stepped through. If you've ever run Black Morass, the Burning Crusade dungeon, when you've got Medivh's, going, Gul'dan, get your warlocks to do stuff. That part.
Ready your legions.
That was the moment.
Yeah, that's when they stepped through. And the thing is, it's funny, is they came through, they thought, we're in a swamp, and thought, this is the greatest, look at all the life here. It's not like our dying planet back home. And immediately boogied back through to tell Gul'dan, hey, yeah, we can go through. So that place was was called the Black Morass. It was back in the day, what we now call the Swamp of Sorrows took up the entirety of both what it is now and what is now the Blasted Lands.
It all looked like that. It was all swampland.
It was one giant bog, essentially. And it was the reason it was such a giant bog was that it bordered on the jungles of Stranglethorn, which is where the trolls lived. It was essentially the delta of all the places that fed down into it. And when they came through, the orcs were like, this is great. They immediately began murdering, isolated human, farmsteads on the way. They were like, because it's like today where you have people who live in the bayou. They, hunt and fish and grow what they can. Those people found themselves getting slaughtered. And word got back to the Kingdom of Stormwind. But this was like, this was the way out there. This was not, these were people that maybe saw someone from Stormwind once every 10 years. This was not this was an incredibly isolated part of the kingdom. So at first the kingdom had no idea what people were talking about. They're like, green people? Do you mean trolls? Trolls are usually kind of a blue color, I think. You don't mean trolls. Who are you talking about? So it took a while. And of course, the king, Lain Rin, went to his trusted childhood friend, Medivh, and said, do you know anything about green people coming through into the swamps from somewhere? No, that doesn't make any sense. Never heard anything like that. Could you look into it? I mean, you're my trusted mage friend. Yeah, I'll totally look into it. If I hear anything, I will be certain to act on it.
I will totally let you know.
And so,
why are you winking at me while you're saying that?
Oh, sorry, nervous stick. So having satisfied himself that, things were under control, Lain went, back. Actually, at the time, Lain was only a prince. His father was actually king at the time. And he went and said, look, I've got top men looking into this, and they haven't heard anything about the green people. He goes, that's interesting because there are green people currently attacking Red Ridge. That's really strange, because I asked him, we don't know anything about it. And soon it became apparent that, yes, there were green people attacking, that there were a lot of them. They were riding wolves, and in general, they were huge pains in the butt. In addition, the Horde was coming through in pretty big numbers because, as we pointed out, Draenor was not sustainable. So they were real serious about taking over, like, Azeroth. It was kind of a do-or-die thing. Even if you were one of the Orcish clans that weren't particularly down Gul'dan's program, which at this point there were a few, most of them would still drunk the blood and it was still kind of crazy, but there were some who were like, Gul'dan seems like a jerk, doesn't he? Yeah, he's just a jerk. I don't like him. But, I mean, we do got to conquer that other planet, though. Oh, yeah, we totally do. Even the Frostwolves went along. And keep in mind, the Frostwolves were like the one orc clan that had not drunk the blood because their chieftain forbid it. Blackhand hadn't drank the blood either, but he basically kind of pulled a, I'm not worthy if you're going to drink it. I mean, chieftain, this honor belongs to you sort of thing. And, you know, Blackhand being a dullard was like, you're right. I do deserve all the blood. Thanks. But Gul'dan not being a dullard was like, all right, I got my eye on you, pal. You're not down with the program. But the Frostwolves just flat out refused. They were like, no, we're not drinking it. But yeah, this planet's boned. We got to get off.
So go with you, but...
Yeah, and they basically made life tough for Gul'dan as long as they could, but he soon dealt with them by basically exiling them. That didn't, however, change the fact that during the first war, the orcs were gung-ho to push their way through, and they had one problem. They were losing. Like, as soon as the Kingdom of Stormwind got its act together, the Brotherhood of the Horse stepped up, and horses were something that they'd never seen before. Now, they had big wolves. Wolves are hard to ride. They're aggressive. They require a lot of, you know, maintenance, and they need meat. Horses eat fodder, and horses are big, and horses just do what you tell them. This was a complete shock to them. They'd never seen this. They'd never really seen anything like horse armor. They'd never seen mounted cavalry tactics. They were harassers. Like, the Wolf Riders are a harasser force. They ride in, harry you, and ride off. They don't charge you. This is not the way... The orcs were completely thrown by this. They're like, what do we, these guys, we go in to harass them and they form ranks and attack us back.
This isn't an angry mob.
Oh.
The way the orcs are used to fighting is it's angry mob versus angry mob, not angry mob versus really organized and well put together militia.
Yeah, and the Draenei, when they fought the Draenei had like magical superiority over the orcs for a long time. But when they lost that, they were basically not set up to fight because they'd always had to retreat. They'd always like been faced with such overwhelming force that their option had always been, okay, we've resisted as hard as we can, now we have to pull out. The orcs caught them in a situation where they couldn't pull out. The humans that never had that attitude. Humans don't pull out unless they, you know, if they have to, but they only pull out so they can fight again. They don't pull out to retreat.
Well, it's not only that too, but it's also another thing where the name of the war host for the orcs at the point, they're the Horde. They were just essentially, like you said, an angry freaking mob. And when you have an angry mob and you're stronger, sure, that makes a whole lot of sense that they're going to win. But the humans were a kingdom of warriors that were used to tactics and receiving orders and having those open lines of communication all the way down. And that's another distinction that I think needs to be made, is because you have these two differences in mentality, right? Orcs, for lack of a better term at this time, the strongest were the chieftains. They kept everybody in line, but they were all each individual chieftains. Yes, there was a war master, but essentially that war chief, that war master, was just one of many clan leads at the time. And
plus, he was a puppet.
He was a puppet too, so he wasn't really like, he wasn't in control. So not only was he not really selected by any, like, a council of chiefs that are like, oh yes, we bow to your superior tactics and knowledge. Whereas the humans were like, okay, yeah, well, the king is, you know, delineating down. He has generals. The generals have their lieutenants and their sergeants. And,
well, plus, there's two things regiments that need to be pointed out. Yeah, there's also two things that need to be pointed out at this time. Blackhand was such a disorganized war chief that his own daughter rebelled against him.
Yes, she ran away.
her name is Giselda, and she basically ran off to the Deadmines with an ogre. Which is like, yep, for an orc, this is the equivalent of you finding out your daughter is dating, you know, like an ogre. Like, it's like, what? An ogre? Like the 8-foot tall morons who like just poop on the ground? Yeah. Yeah. She left with one of them. So he was mad right there. He was distracted. But it also proved that he didn't like the other orcish chieftains were like, well, he can't even control his own daughter. I'm supposed to follow this guy. And I know Gul'dan's behind this. I know Gul'dan's, they all knew Gul'dan was like secretly in charge. So they were like more staring at what Gul'dan was going to do than really paying attention to Blackhand. Plus, then, as we pointed out, they were losing the war because they were fighting Anduin Lothar. Anduin Lothar was the last Arathor, he was called. He was the last blood descendant of Thoradin. Whether or not he was the last blood descendant of the Arathi people, that's probably not the case. Because the Igneous of Strom, Igneous Trollbane, his descendants were the ones who were currently ruling up in Strom, and they were definitely Arathor. I mean, there's no way around it. But
he was the last descendant of that bloodline.
He was the last descendant of Thoradin himself, and Thoradin was the guy who united humanity. Before Thoradin, humanity was a group of warring tribes that had no unity, had no leadership. And yeah, I feel like I'm talking about the orcs again, but I'm not. Humanity basically was Azeroth's version of orcs in a way.
Yep.
In
that they were
aggressive, warlike, fairly, you know, short-lived, often surrounded by races that were more powerful individually, but humans managed to overcome it with group tactics and a willingness to do things other people just weren't. Like, high elves just aren't going to make a cavalry charge against a bunch of trolls. They're like, we could get hurt doing that. Whereas humans are like, yeah, but we're going to hurt them more.
So let's move it forward a little bit here and talk about, obviously, during this point, Lane Rin, his father died, and he took the throne at, I think he was 20 when he took the throne.
He certainly wasn't much older if he wasn't.
Yeah, he wasn't much older than that. And he was left with this problem to deal with of these orc attacks. Keep in mind that the first war, unlike, you know, World of Warcraft expansions, they're typically known for, it's like, oh, this is a year's worth of time. This entire expansion took place over the course of a year in game time, in canon time. The first war stretched on for years. Mm-hmm. It was a lot longer period of time. So let's talk about Lane's rule in particular and this guy that people might be a little bit familiar with named Khadgar, because he comes into the picture during this too.
Yeah. But you want to talk about it or want me to?
You can, or man. Joe can if Joe wants to.
No. But keep going, man.
All right. Well, Khadgar, the thing is that Medivh was kind of like, at the same time he was plotting and doing evil stuff, there was a part of Medivh that wasn't entirely on board with what was going on. Like, he knew, he was like, why am I doing this? It's almost like I'm possessed by an evil demon. But anyway, so he basically started acting very strangely. The Council of Tirisfal and I can't think of the name of the people who run Dalaran.
The Kirin Tor.
Kirin Tor, thank you. That was a problem there. they were both pretty concerned because whether or not they'd appointed him, Medivh was the guardian. You don't. When he's acting weird, especially when, like, they keep hearing rumors about these weird monsters who are coming through some kind of, like, you know, they're coming up out of the swamp, they were concerned. So they basically came up with a subterfuge to appoint him an apprentice, which is, you know, cute. And
the fun part is, like, they'd appointed him a lot of apprentices over the period of time because Medivh wasn't chosen by the Kirin Tor. He wasn't chosen by the Council of Tirisfal. He was born because Eowyn said, I don't feel like passing my powers to somebody that you pick. I'm going to choose who the next guardian is, and I'm going to choose it by having a baby. And that baby is going to be the guardian. Bye. And dropped the mic, walked out, right? So they didn't really have a whole lot of contact with Medivh to begin with. So they kept sending him apprentices in an attempt to keep track of the guy, to actually like get in touch with the guy and you know, hey, how you doing, buddy? You know, we're supposed to be friends and maybe you should let us know what you're doing exactly, because we don't know and we should. And Medivh just, you know, ran through these apprentices. They'd last like maybe a week and then they'd get terrified and they'd leave.
Yeah, he was basically, it was basically a thing where it was, everyone knew what was going on. The council, the Kirin Tor knew they weren't sending these people to actually learn anything. The only people who didn't know were the apprentices. No one bothered to tell them, oh yeah, we're sending you to the most powerful and secretive mage on the planet who may or may not be evil. We don't know. So yeah, you should just spy on them. But you know, don't spy on them too hard because then
just
it might.
Just be discreet.
We don't make it obvious.
Be discreet about it. And yeah.
But Khadgar, Khadgar is funny because there's a lot of interesting facts to like the dichotomy between Khadgar and Medivh. Medivh's name is like an old Thalassian word for secrets. Khadgar's name is Dwarvish for, you know, basically honesty.
For trust. You
know, yeah, for trust. So the two of them, like, from the beginning, the two of them had a very odd relationship where Medivh at first, you know, he's like, oh, another one. But after a while, he's like, you're not like the others. There's a mind in there. You're actually pretty smart. I find you interesting. And Khadgar, for his point, managed to not break when confronted with Karazhan, the place where time doesn't work right. And the Medivh's manservant wears horse blinders to keep from going crazy. And who's the green lady? Why is she here? Isn't she one of the things that's invading the... You're talking to them?
I like how Khadgar, when Khadgar first shows up, he meets up with Medivh, and Medivh doesn't automatically take him as an apprentice. Medivh says, I need you to organize my library. And just like sends him to the library. And Karazhan's library, if you've raided Karazhan, that library is huge. And Medivh basically told Khadgar, yeah, I need you to put this in order because it's a mess down there. And I'll get in touch with you later. And just left Khadgar there
yeah.
to do the cleaning, basically. And Khadgar, to his credit, didn't like collapse under the pressure of, wow, there's so many dangerous magical tomes and things down here that could kill me. Plus, you know, the tower is warping time itself. I'm just going to stay put and I'm going to organize these books because that's what he told me to do. So I'm going to do it. And by the time he got done organizing that library, Medivh showed up and went, wow. And then actually took him on as an apprentice. And that's Khadgar is the first person to actually like get through to Medivh and gain that spot that he was sent to get.
And basically, as he stayed there, Khadgar started to understand, okay, while not the ogre I was being told he was, not an actual ogre, just, you know, he's not what I thought he was. He's not the monster out of legend, but he might actually be worse in some ways. And he's doing something. And finally, when he finally understood what Medivh had done, when he finally understood that it was Medivh who'd helped create the Dark Portal, that Medivh was the one who basically made it possible for the orcs to invade, he was pretty torn about it. Like, he didn't really know what to do. I think it was actually him and Garona together that came up with the idea of contacting the humans.
Yeah, by then he had been talking to Garona. The two of them actually experienced a vision, like a dual vision. Because what happens in Karazhan is time gets a little bit wonky, and one minute you're walking through a hallway, and the next minute you're reliving some part of the past or future. You don't know which. And both Khadgar and Garona witnessed Medivh calling the orcs through the dark portal. It was like, boom, 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 there it is right there. There's the guy who's responsible. And yeah, they talked together and decided to go to King Ren. Cause I mean, what else can you do at that point?
Yeah. And this is a problem because one of the things that the reason that Medivh was so trusted by Lane and by the Stormwind royal family in general is because Medivh was the son of Nyala Saran, who was the court enchanter for Stormwind. He was a well-respected mage. He wasn't in the Cairn Tor, but he was respected and, you know, admired throughout the Kingdom of Stormwind. And as a result, Medivh and Lane grew up together. And not only did that, they also grew up with Anduin Lothar.
They were all buddies.
Yeah. In their teen years, before things had happened, they'd gone on adventures together. Like, that's one of the things they did together. Was go out and have adventures. We don't know
exactly. And it
was
before Medivh even came into his powers or anything. It was they were just kids. They were really just kids.
Yeah. And so after Medivh had, you know, gone into his... how long was he out? Like 20 years?
It was a long time, yeah.
Medivh basically went into a fit one day. I guess he blew up his dad.
When he turned, I believe it was 13. When he turned 13, he came into his powers one night, and it was like this really kind of distressing thing that was happening, and he went to go find his dad to ask his dad for help, and as he was speaking to his father, all of a sudden everything kicked in, and that backlash of magical power pretty much disintegrated his dad. Just boop, he's gone.
And so,
and then he went into a coma for 20 years. And when he woke up, he was no longer a 13-year-old boy. He was a 33-year-old man who had lost that entire period of time.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if Medivh hadn't had a demon lord inside of his head, he probably wouldn't have been all that stable. But at any rate, he and since they were childhood friends, I mean, it was very hard for Lane to know what to do. I mean, he's like, what are you telling me? You're telling me Medivh did all this? Medivh used to just throw rocks at the lake and he had terrible aim. You're telling me he... And finally, it was Lothar who said, all right, Your Highness, he was my friend too, but he needs to die. So I'm going to go kill him now. Because that was Lothar.
I'm going to go take care of the problem.
Lothar was ever the pragmatic one.
So he went, and along with Khadgar and Garona, he went to the, and he brought soldiers, of course, because you don't go try and kill like the most powerful wizard on the planet with no backup. They went to the tower, and it didn't go very well.
No.
As you might expect, Medivh wasn't down with the being stabbed thing. And the funny thing is at that moment, the orcs were like still having trouble. And so Gul'dan was in contact with Medivh because Medivh had made him some promises. Medivh had promised him essential godhood. He told him that there was an entity called Sargeras on this planet, and in his tomb was enough power for Gul'dan to effectively become a god.
Help me. You bring the orcs to Azeroth. You build this little portal thing with me, and I will give you all the powers of a god.
Yeah, and now he didn't tell him, of course, all the power in the tomb is much less than what I personally have because I am Sargeras, because, you know, bomb, bomb, bomb. But he still, you know, Gul'dan knew, all right, I don't trust anybody, so I know that there's BS going on here, but if there's even the slightest chance I could become a god, I'm going to take this risk. So at that moment, they were kind of having a mental confab where Gul'dan was like, you know, you promised me some things, and I haven't seen nothing. I mean, and, you know, Medivh would be like, well, you haven't conquered the humans. Like, you didn't say anything about conquering the humans. And for that matter, if you'd come through, I could have conquered the humans by myself by now. So what's going on? And so he was a little distracted when the Let's Kill Medivh posse showed up. He still put up quite a fight. In the end, it was his apprentice and his best friend who killed him because Medivh stabbed him. I mean, not me, sorry, Khadgar stabbed Medivh, and then Lothar decapitated him. And that was, for then, the end of Medivh, for then.
And the interesting part about that is just before Khadgar stabbed him. Now, keep in mind that Khadgar, as an apprentice, he was a young man. He was a very young man. He tried to attack Medivh. And Medivh turned on him and basically aged Khadgar. Magically aged him and drained all of his magic powers he was basically this doddering old man, essentially. And Khadgar somehow managed to pull the strength together to grab a sword and shove it through Medivh's chest, you know, apologizing as was only polite, but.
Well, yeah. And basically Lothar gave him that opportunity, right? Cause Lothar was the distraction. Like he was engaging Medivh in combat while Khadgar gathered himself up and was like, oh shit, I can't cast spells. I probably should go do something. Oh wait, I've actually been trained how to use swords and stuff like that. Here happens to be a sword. Okay.
Yeah. And it was basically, the funny thing is that by doing that, they changed the course of the war, but in a direction they couldn't possibly have anticipated, because they intended this to be like, well, once he's gone, the portal will close and everything will be fine. That's not what happened. First off, the portal didn't close because the portal was being sustained by itself at this point. And that was something no one had understood.
And but second, what, yeah.
The worst part, and do you want to go? You haven't talked. You
sure. Yeah. The second, the worst part, since Gul'dan was having a mental chat with Medivh at the moment of his death, Gul'dan himself was thrown into a coma just as like part of that mental backlash from, oh, I'm talking to a guy. Oh, that guy just lost his head. He's no longer there. And Gul'dan was the one that was thrown into a coma. And of course, since Gul'dan is thrown into a coma, suddenly Blackhand doesn't have the Shadow Council at his back because they're wondering what happened to Gul'dan.
While they were occupied, then you have Orgrim, who gets his opportunity to say, you know what, this Blackhand guy, I don't really dig what he's putting down, so I'm going to go ahead and just kind of take control.
Yeah.
Hey, you, I'm going to challenge you. Let's fight. Oh, your little warlock, he's busy elsewhere. Let's go.
Well, to be fair, he didn't bother to challenge him.
He just, he, he just, He went in and just killed him.
Yeah, there's a reason that the orcs called Orgrim the backstabber. Yeah. Because he literally just was like, it's like, I want you to imagine a tent full of orcs and someone's like, Gul'dan's in a coma. And Blackhand's like, what? Gul'dan's in a... He doesn't finish the sentence.
Orgrim just turns around and cuts his
head. hits him in the back of the head with a giant hammer and it's like, okay,
I'm in charge now.
Everyone's like, okay, yeah, you're war chief.
All right,
now.
Whoa, yeah, okay, you're in charge. Hands are up. Cool. Yeah. You want to run the horde? All right, we'll let you. But there were some people who were still loyal to Blackhand. The thing about Orgrim is he was very clever. He knew that Gul'dan was kind of pulling the strings, and with Gul'dan out of the picture, that was his chance. So he took that chance. He killed Blackhand, he seized control of the Horde, and then he turned around and systematically wiped out the Shadow Council.
Oh, yeah.
Hunted them down. And the way he was able to do this was that he had Garona caught. Garona was captured. They tortured Garona until she revealed where the Shadow Council was hiding out at. And then she managed to escape. She got out of there. But Orgrim just kind of went around and said, oh, yeah, you're Shadow Council. You're dead. And just pretty much wiped out. There was like maybe a handful of people left by the time he was done. And then Gul'dan
and Cho'Gall, though.
Right. And then Gul'dan woke up. But here's the deal, though. Since Orgrim had all of the control and all of the power and he'd wiped out the Shadow Council and he had the Horde, he said, okay, cool. You know what we're going to do? We're going to wipe out that city over there.
Yeah.
And took the whole force to Stormwind.
For me, the best part has always been basically when Gul'dan wakes up and the Shadow Council's all dead and there's Orgrim Doomhammer, who he's never trusted and who has never trusted him. And Doomhammer's like, okay, I've been trying to conquer that city while you were out, and it hasn't really gone like I wanted in that the city has not been conquered yet. And I really think you might be involved in my friend's death.
Now, here's my question, though, because the timeline's kind of fuzzy for me. But if I remember correctly, Gul'dan didn't wake up until after they'd finished conquering Stormwind, correct? Because they brought him in for the whole second war effort. And that's when they brought in the Death Knights and everything. They weren't part of the first war.
I thought that was second war because I thought
Gul'dan made the arrangement, we'll call it, with Orgrim in prep for the second war. Because I thought the whole thing with the Shadow Council and Gul'dan happened after the first war.
Well, no, the Gul'dan definitely went down during the first war.
He went down during the first war, but I don't think he came back until after Stormwind had been conquered, because Orgrim pretty much took control. There weren't any Death Knights during the first war. During the second war is when Gul'dan brought them in.
Oh, you know what the problem is? We skipped ahead a little bit. That's what was confusing me. Orgrim didn't kill the Shadow Council until after Stormwind fell.
Right.
Okay.
Because that's how Garona got captured after she did the thing she did that we have to talk about now.
Okay.
Because Garona got captured on her way back from Stormwind. Because here's the thing. Anne mentioned the visions that Khadgar and Garona had seen. But she only really talked about the one that they shared.
There was one vision that she had by herself. Yeah.
You should talk about it. You should tell that one.
Here's the thing about Garona. Garona's interesting. Garona was acting as kind of an ambassador between the orcs and the humans. And her point of contact was Medivh, but through Medivh, she also got introduced to Layne Rin and Anduin Lothar, but mostly Layne Rin. Layne Rin was probably the one human being that she'd met, and possibly even the one creature that she had met, who treated her from the very moment that he met her with the kind of respect that nobody else had. Because Garona was only half orc. She wasn't fully orc. And everybody sort of assumed that she was half orc, half human. Even she did. And it turned out later that she was half orc, half Draenei. It's just she didn't know about that. She didn't learn about that until years and years later. So she's going in there under this supposition that she's half orc, half human. Well, the orcs saw her and saw somebody who was very weak and kind of like, you know, a runt, somebody who wasn't good enough to be an orc, because obviously she was half of this other weakling race, whatever that weakling race happened to be. And the humans, they saw the green skin and went, that's a monster, right? Lane was the only one who treated her with any kind of respect. So she had like this almost friendship thing going on with King Lane. It wasn't quite a we're best buddies or anything, but there was a certain amount of respect that she allowed Lane that she allowed nobody else. And in this vision in Karazhan, she saw herself walk up to Lane Wrynn, her friend, the only person, the only human who had ever treated her with that kind of kindness and respect, and stabbed him in the heart and then carved his heart out like right there in Stormwind's throne room. And the thing, the vision completely shocked her because, number one, this was not something that she wanted to do. And if this was going to be her future, what was the point of living right now? This was like absolutely horrifying to her. The other thing is that she was under the control of the Shadow Council. And by under control, I mean, they had her conditioned to respect. She was basically magically ensorcelled by them. If they gave her an order, she had to carry it out. And she kind of knew that. So during the first war here, they gave her the order. They pulled the trigger and they gave her the order. They said, okay, you're going to go kill Wrynn now. And she had no choice. She had to go to the throne room. And of course Lane was there because Lane trusted her. And of course there were no guards because Lane trusted her. There was nobody around because Lane trusted her. And she took that trust and basically stabbed him in the heart and then cut out his heart. And this was all right in front of him. She didn't realize it, but this was all right in front of his son, Varian, who was only like, what, 5 or 6 at the time? He was just a little boy. And in flashbacks and future flashbacks and comics and things like that, Varian always notes that Garona was crying as she did this, and he didn't understand why there were tears while she was doing this. It was because there was one part of her that knew exactly what she was doing and didn't want to be doing it, but she was being forced to carry it out.
Yeah, and when she did that, that's the moment where Stormwind basically was like, as long as as long as Lane was up, the kingdom wasn't going to fall. The knights were going to fight. They were going to keep holding on. But when Lane died, Lothar basically is in a position where he has to think about preserving the line. The queen had died years previously. The only person left to hold the line was Varian, who was at this point was a very young child. I don't even think he was 5. Because he's like, there's pictures of Anduin Lothar carrying Varian out of there. And he's a bundle. Like he's easily.
Yeah, he's a young kid. He's definitely like 5, 6, 7, somewhere in there, because the pictures from the comics show him as a young boy. And he's definitely cognizant of what is going on.
But he's not big. He's a small kid. And so basically Lothar is like, all right, I'm looking at this. I can try and make a last stand here. And we'll probably lose everybody. Or I can evacuate the city, and the only people we're going to lose are the Brotherhood of the Horse. So he goes to the Brotherhood and says, look, this is the situation. I won't order you to do this, but I need a vanguard.
If there's any hope of saving any of these people.
Someone has to stay here and fight until we're out. And the Brotherhood, basically to a man, says, all right, we're your men. We'll do it. Get the people out of here. So the last survivor of the Brotherhood of the Horse, the Knightly Order that had held the orcs off at this point for at least a decade, because the war is at least 10 years. Varian was born during it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the war had been going on. The war had been going on into Lane's father's realm. It had started during his father's reign, and it had continued. He'd become king during war, and he'd never seen peace in his entire reign. So the Brotherhood forms up, and even with all the advantages, even with Lane dead, even with people retreating, the orcs still find themselves unable to progress until they kill the Brotherhood. And that takes them quite a while. The Brotherhood hold them. By the time they get into Stormwind, everybody's gone. I want to point her out because she's really cool, and I can't remember her exact name, but Lady Mara Fordragon, Bolvar's mother, took charge of the actual evacuation while Anduin was like going forth and setting up the defense. She's the one. The reason that there's anybody left alive from Stormwind from that period is because of Mara Fordragon. Because she's the one that got them on the boats. She's the one that got them on the water. You know, she was the one who basically said, you know, all right, you go do what you have to do to buy us some time. I'm going to get everybody out of here.
And Lothar couldn't stay. He couldn't stay and fight with the Brotherhood of the Horse because, quite frankly, he was basically leading them all kind of like as regent by default.
Yeah.
Yeah. Varian wasn't old enough to take over. Nobody else was in charge of the kingdom. It was just him.
He was the only one. Yeah. He was the only one with the proper heritage, because while he wasn't the son of a king himself, he was the last of the Arathor bloodline. He was essentially the last descendant of the first king humanity ever had. So by definition, he was a royalty. He was royalty.
So he kind of ushered everybody out and hopped on the boat with Varian and took care of Varian when Varian had nobody at that point. So he took care of Varian, took Varian under his wing, and they all fled to Lordaeron across the sea. Yeah. And in their absence, the orcs pretty much burnt down the entirety of the capital. They just ran it to the ground. And that's basically the end of the first war. It's not a happy ending for humanity.
No. It's really weird about the end of the war, too, is because this is like the period between this and the actual march north. The orcs do some crazy things. Like, first thing they do is they build boats.
Yep.
Because they, and you know, because they had boats back home and they knew what boats worked. And they build boats because they're like, no, we're going to go after them. We're going to go conquer everything. But this is also when Orgrim has to start consolidating his power. Because, like you pointed out, not everyone who was loyal to Blackhand was suddenly like, well, yay, Orgrim's our guy. They were all like, he just mashed him in the face with a hammer when his back was turned. And I'm not following that guy. I'm going to challenge him to Magora, whatever it is we call it.
I'm going to follow Blackhand's sons, Rend and Mame, because they're actually the people who should be leading the Horde by...
I'm sorry, Rend and Mame.
I know, right?
Could he have named them anything? Like, you know, other possible names.
The best part is that there's like Rend and Mame, and then there's Griselda.
I wanted to name her Butcher, but her mother wouldn't let me.
Her mother wouldn't let me. She put it down.
You've already named our son stupid things.
So, you know, just to kind of like back off from this a little bit here. Obviously, you know, the first war, it was the Burning Legion behind the scenes. Because this was Sargeras. This was the leader of the Burning Legion that was kind of pulling the strings here. The last time the Burning Legion had made any kind of major attack against Azeroth was back during the War of the Ancients, when Kalimdor was the only continent. And the end of that ended with Sargeras getting kind of punted back through that portal, and the sundering happened. So all of these disparate continents kind of like came out of the whole thing, and the Night Elves were very clearly on Kalimdor. So my question is, was Sargeras bringing the orcs through to conquer humanity, was that part of a bigger like revenge plot against the Night Elves? Was the reason that he was carrying all this out on the Eastern Kingdoms was so that he could establish some kind of dominance before taking the fight to Kalimdor and kicking the Night Elves in the teeth?
See, I don't know. Like, part of that is weird to me too, because there are things stated throughout like the books and quotes in game and stuff like that, that I partially think that his whole game, the whole thing with that, was trying to get a force that he could manipulate so that he could get his darn body back, or his avatar form, because I think, and we've talked about it a little bit, is even though he was inside of Medivh, I think there was always and no matter how much havoc Medivh wreaked, right, there was always a piece of Medivh that was still human, that was still fighting against it. There was still that moral compass inside that was like, man, you know, I could just wipe out all of humanity if I snap my fingers. Wait a minute, what am I thinking? That's a horrible idea. But oh, wait a minute, I could just open up this magical portal. I like experimenting with magical things. This seems like a great idea. You know, it's almost seemed like a really subtle play to kind of get Sargeras into a part where he could theoretically reclaim a physical form
that would let him wage war
and destroy. But I think it was like the first steps maybe of a revenge plot.
Well, what I'm wondering is, because I mean, the implication seems to be, I mean, when Aegwynn first went up against the avatar of Sargeras, she killed him without a second thought. It was just like, boom, it was over.
Sure.
So the implication always seemed to be that Sargeras meant that to happen so that he could inhabit Aegwynn.
Well, so here's my thoughts on that, right? And you guys can agree with me or disagree with me. There are a couple things that I think are important here. One, Medivh tells Gul'dan about the tomb of Sargeras and that there's great power there. Gul'dan is pulling the strings at the time of the Horde. Okay, well, now he kind of knows where this is. He knows that this is a great source of power. If anything should theoretically happen to Medivh, quote-unquote, there's a good chance that Gul'dan's going to go and unearth the tomb, right? During the time of Medivh's death, and I think this was partially planned by Sejeras, there's a moment where Cagdar stabs him, and the essence of Sargeras tries to separate from the body of Medivh. He tries to basically loose himself free, right? I think that was the plan all along, was that this whole thing was going to, you kill the guardian so you don't have the opposition. You have this force that's going to do your dirty work of unearthing your physical form that, well, one, you're a little more comfortable with, and two, is here. It's physically on this material plane, which we know is a big deal for the Legion. They need a portal, or they need something to inhabit in order to be here. And three, your current vessel is fighting you when you're trying to go against it. So you eliminate your biggest opposition, right? Because you kill the Guardian. You basically loose that power back into the source that it came from, the fonts, goes back to all the other mages and basically back into the magic as a whole. So you don't have to worry about that. It's going to take them time to get another guardian together because there's a war going on. There's a whole bunch of stuff to distract them. And your body is basically being uncovered at this point. You just kind of float around for a little bit and then go right back in. And
so basically wipe out the defense system by taking out the guardians altogether.
Exactly. And so
then take out humanity, because humanity is obviously pretty strong force by this point.
Well, and let's not. Sargeras is not a moron. He's evil. He's a force of chaos, and he's unwinding things and unbinding things. But he's not dumb. And if he notices that the power of these human mages rivals that of anything that's happened in the past, that you know, he's had run-ins with the High Elves. He's had run-ins with the spiritual defenders, these avatars of nature and spirit of Azeroth itself. He's had interactions with
these. He hasn't actually.
Or not indirectly, right?
His people have. The interesting thing about Sargeras is he wasn't even physically able to come through during the War of the Ancients.
No.
Like his true form wasn't able to come through because one orc hurt him.
Brock-Sagar. Yeah.
So because that happened, there's some suspicion that that's why the Legion picked orcs to do their dirty work instead of just trying to, like, kill the Draenei directly. But usually in the past, when the Legion found the Draenei, they hit them, and then the Draenei would run away. They went with a different tact, in part because it never worked, but also in part because Kil'jaeden would have recognized the orcs.
Sure.
Because Brock-Sagar would have been something they all knew about, because he hurt Sargeras. And Kil'jaeden might have been thinking, even back then, you know, I'd really like to get rid of Sargeras, so I was in charge of the Legion.
You know, if we want to take it one step further, though, isn't it kind of interesting that the whole reason that they knew about the orcs to begin with is because Nosdormu sent Brock-Sagar and Khadgar from the future back in time?
Yeah, it's like
there's that weird circle thing going on.
I actually have always found myself wondering if that was, in fact, part of Nosdormu's strategy in the first place. If he wanted, because I keep saying it, Azeroth is the worst planet for the Legion.
Yes.
Every time they come here, it doesn't go well for them. Every plan they have that involves Azeroth ends up, this entire plan that Sargeras had, if his plan was to get liberated from his body, the problem is when he gets liberated from his body, he gets sent right back to the Nether. He doesn't have the ability to possess his body again once Medivh is dead. And I don't think that his goal was to get separated from Medivh and cast into the Nether. I think his goal, if his goal was to get Medivh killed, then he had a body lined up already, and that body was Gul'dan.
Maybe, but I mean, the other side of that coin, though, is we don't know what happens if... Okay, so here's the thing that we don't know, right? So we know if a demon is killed or banished or whatever, it goes back to the Twisting Nether. We assume that this happens.
Here's the thing, though. That's the case with demons, but Sargeras transcends demons.
I was getting to that, right? Like, so we don't know what happens when, like, an entity like Sargeras, as powerful as he is, he's a
Titan. Let's just call him. He's a Titan.
He's a Titan. We don't know what happens to his essence when he decides to extricate himself from what form he's in. And this is a planet filled with one Titan tech. This is a planet that was formed by Titan technology and magics. We don't know what was in place there. So there could have been, Gul'dan could have been the next body.
Here's the thing, though.
But it could have been anything else.
Here's why I don't think it was anything else. Because it says in the Last Guardian that he is stranded in the Nether. He's not free to act. When his body gets killed, it's a bad thing for him. He's not. So I don't see somebody as intelligent as Sargeras making a plan that involved him being stuck. Now, I also don't think Sargeras had anything to do with the design of Azeroth. not, I don't know the timeline. We, again, I'm going to do a plug for
it.
For,
was, you know, it was created after.
We need that book to come out.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Chronicle.
We really do.
Warcraft Chronicle needs to come out so we can basically go, aha! But right now, the way I understand it is Azeroth was made after Sargeras fell. And I think Anne is right in her theorizing that that Azeroth is made almost as a defense system against Sargeras. But one thing is clear. I don't. He might have picked the way he came into the world because there's no Night Elves, but I honestly think it was simply the fact that he found the place where there was somebody who could do it. You know what I mean? Like, he needed someone like Egwene. And the Night Elves had completely abandoned arcane magic except for, like, a few that were living in, like, the middle of nowhere. It's not like the people at Eldrathalos were going to do him any good. They were busy, like, summoning minor demons to feed on. I mean, Imolthar is not that important. You know? So they were a dead end. The guys up in Silvermoon were crazy paranoid about demon summoning.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to get anywhere with them. And the only reason he got anywhere with Egwene was because of her sense of duty. Like, think about it. If Egwene hadn't been the workaholic that she was, if she had basically not, you know, heard minor rumors, like, his entire plan consisted of tricking Egwene into coming north to
Let's go punch some blue dragons and hope the Guardian shows up.
Yeah, like, it's one of those plans that only works because Egwene was ridiculously dedicated to her job. To the point where she decides to have a child because she doesn't trust the Council of Tirisfal to do the job right. It's not that she doesn't trust them for a lot of things, but she also doesn't trust them to do the job as well as she can. And she's not wrong, you know? It's Egwene's, like, how long was she guardian? Like, 1,000 years?
A very, very, very long time. She used magic to extend her own life long past where it should have been.
So during her, like, 1,000-year reign as guardian, she took on a lot. Like, she was not idle at all. So it's just, I think Sargeras' plan was basically, I need someone powerful enough to endure this, someone dedicated enough to, like, you know, do the things I want her to do, and somebody, you know, contrary enough to, like, if she had given the power back, his plan would have been for nothing.
Sure, but I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. It's like, it's playing against the players you know, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things we know about the Legion as a whole is they gather data, too. Like, they're not just mindless.
Well, you know, that's the entire reason. That's the entire reason they allow warlocks to exist who aren't, like, actively doing anything. I mean, and Azeroth has those and has had those, like, for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Every time they attack, any time a demon shows up, that demon isn't just there to wreak havoc. That demon is also
recon,
measuring what's going on and reporting back. Well, anyway, we are reaching that time period here where we should probably be wrapping things up. So Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. And your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. And as always, if you have something that you would like us to cover on Lorewatch, you can send an email to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just be sure that you put Lorewatch somewhere in the subject line so that we know it's intended for here and not the other show. And with that, let's go ahead and get some final thoughts. Rossi?
Honestly, I'm looking forward to if we talk about the Second War, because that ties really heavily into what we're about to do in Legion.
We can go ahead and touch on that next week.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Okay. And Joe, final thoughts?
I'm with Rossi on that one, because the First War is one of those things where it's really weird and complicated and has been retconned a whole lot of times between comics and books and the actual game of Warcraft 1. And
this movie that's going to come out and retcon it.
And then the movie's going to come out and it's going to retcon it again. And it's one of those weird things. However, the Second and Third War have remained almost okay for the entire time they've been out. So I'm looking forward to talking about those because there's a little more continuity, we'll say.
As for that book we were discussing, that's World of Warcraft Chronicle Volume 1. That actually comes out on March 15th, so we don't have that much longer to wait. And honestly, you guys, if you haven't pre-ordered this yet, you should give me your address so I can pre-order it for you, because I feel like it's required reading. We're going to need to read it before the episode of Lorewatch.
There's going
to
be a whole lot of sleepless nights going back through that book and writing down notes, let's be honest.
Taking notes, and we could just like discuss that in depth on an episode of Lorewatch, maybe.
The week that it comes out, the show will just be, did you read that?
Did you read that? Did you hear about that? There's spoilers.
We were right. Oh, God, we were wrong. Oh, my God, look at this. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so I would definitely recommend, if you haven't pre-ordered that book, you should pre-order it. And like I said, Rossi, Joe, if you guys haven't pre-ordered it yet for yourselves, give me your addresses and I will pre-order it for you because we need that. Anyway, that's it for this episode of Lore Watch, and we will be back in 2 weeks' time. We'll probably be talking about the Second War, but who knows? Something else entertaining might come up between now and then. If you have any questions about the wars or about the movie, even like the lore in the movie versus the lore in the game, you can go ahead and certainly send those our way as well. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.